Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Today, every federal agency operates in an environment where budgets are tightening and the demand for services seems to be increasing. Agencies need to become more effective and more efficient with the resources they have. The Federal Systems Integration and Management Center, FedSIM, within GSA, works to assist agencies to do just that. What are the strategic priorities for FedSIM? How does FedSIM work with federal agencies? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Chris Hamm, Director of FedSIM. So Chris, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Tom Bertke. Tom, welcome as always.
Great. Thank you, Michael.
Chris, would you tell us more about the mission and history of GSA's Federal Systems Integration and Management Center?
Sure. The core concept is really around having a bunch of high-quality technical professionals that also know acquisition and getting them together to create a functional specialty around doing really large projects. It started in 1972. It was a bunch of enterprising folks from the Air Force. It wasn't GSA. GSA delegated authority to the Air Force to create this special program that was going to focus on high-performance computers, do analysis on those computers, see how much they could get the most out of them, performance benchmarking, testing, and reporting. So it was a bunch of blue suitors who really did work on the hardware itself and then creating and writing their own reports. They got very good at it. Mm-hmm. They started doing service for other parts of the military. The Air Force was going to do work for the Army, do work for the Navy. Commanders rotate in and out, and suddenly a new commander rotates in and says, why are we doing work for the other services? That's not really an Air Force mission. So it started to morph from being a service for other entities within the Air Force in discussions with GSA to move it back to GSA. Okay. So in 1985, the entire program was lifted from the Air Force and moved into GSA and merged with another program. Think about where technology was evolving at that time. There were large systems with basically dumb clients. And then around in the 80s and then to the 90s, the rise of the personal computer, rise of software, the people who were experts in that kind of underlying technology mm-hmm. were no longer experts in the way the technology was moving. So they stopped doing work as their own technical consultants and started to hire contractors. So it started to shift the mission from underlying technical expertise doing work itself as the government to a procurement activity that also hired outside technical experts and then managed the study or the production of whatever we were building for the government. So it really started to morph in that 80s and 90s time period, and that's when technology took off. The dollar amount and the importance to the way that the government operates really started to change. And that's kind of how we got to where the organization is today.
And operationally, how are you organized? What sort of mix and size of the services, the portfolio that you have, and how do you fund your operations?
It's one of the most interesting things about it. It's the organization is not appropriated. Mm-hmm. It's an entirely fee-for-service organization, not mandatory. No one has to use us. If we're not any good, we'd go out of business. Mm-hmm. The organization does probably two main things that the rest of the federal government would choose to buy. The first is we help award contracts. So we'll manage the acquisition process for a very, very large competition. Think something around $100 million, around $1 billion. Mm-hmm. Each agency has their own contracting office, but they buy things like a large system about once every 5 years. I buy about 20 a year.
Wow.
So we have experts that know how to manage and navigate that large acquisition process, getting through all of the paperwork for contracting. And then once it's awarded, then we're going to manage the service delivery from that contractor for that customer. So any part of the federal government that's using us, we'll assign resources to work directly with that agency throughout the life cycle of a contract. From who we are, how many people we are kind of thing. This year we'll probably do $1.7 billion in annual revenue. That revenue is mostly contracted dollars going out for working on projects with large system integration companies. We have 143 people right now. That's been rising. We'll probably continue to grow there. The work mix is it's more defense than civilian. Okay. Some of it is the nature of the way that dollars are spent. DoD is obviously a huge budget. And some of it is organizationally. We've done work with the DoD for the entire organizational history. We tend to keep a lot of the customers once they get the value of the service. So right now it's probably 60% DoD, 40% civilian. The civilian market, it's not all of them. It's a couple of major ones. We work with the Department of Agriculture and Homeland Security are probably the two biggest clients. We do have GSA internally as a customer as well. And fourth biggest is probably the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, and then a bunch of other smaller things throughout the civilian market.
So, Chris, welcome. Glad you could make it this morning. I already know that FedSIM thinks of itself as a program management organization that happens to issue contracts. Can you explain the theory behind this definition?
Some of it is just getting to the core alignment of how the government should be focused rather than focusing on the individual processes. The government likes to organize around certain activities. It makes sense when you're drawing an org chart to put something on a box like acquisition or procurement for one thing and then mission or program somewhere else. The two things shouldn't be separate. Yeah. The whole reason why you have a buying arm is so that it helps you buy the thing that you get the outcome of what you need in the first place. So don't draw them as separate boxes. Merge them into the same thing. Our goal is to help a customer, when they have an idea and money, to get them through all of the regulations and paperwork to actually get the outcome that they want. And then if you think about it from a time standpoint, the act of buying is a couple of months. The delivery arm tends to be a couple of years. Most of your time and energy should be spent on the delivery side.
So, Chris, what are your specific responsibilities as director of FedSIM within the GSA Office of Assisted Acquisition Services, and how do your efforts support GSA's overall mission?
I just recently became the director. I got the job in November of 2014. Before that, I was the deputy director for 5 years. The two different roles are similar to what you'd see in a private company. The vice president, the deputy director, tends to focus on internal operations, setting all policy, all training, quality, human resources kind of stuff that's, internally focused. The director job is the mirror image of that. It's an external-facing job where I interact primarily with GSA leadership, with industry leadership, and then trying to run the entire organization. So the annual budget, the amount of FTE and staffing that we have, all core interaction with any stakeholder, congressional interest kind of thing. And then whether or not the organization strategically is going to grow and how we're going to change our overall posture within the market. So I'm spending a lot more time outside events, interacting with industry, much more trade associations, and then trusting the internal staff to deliver.
So, Chris, given your role and responsibilities and duties, what are your, say, top three challenges that you face in your position? How have you sought to address those challenges?
I definitely have three. you could probably limit me there to three, but probably the most topical right now is the Continuous Diagnostic and Monitoring Program.
CDM.
So my office was out, the DHS office that runs the CDM program sought out the procurement expertise of my office in order to run that program. So we are trying to do a government-wide vehicle to buy two different things. Phase one is the sensors and devices that are going to go out across the federal networks. And then the second part is the identity management of everyone who's on the networks. Mm-hmm. Trying to get the government to buy as one. Obviously, it would make great business sense. You would leverage pricing. But, the government is large and diverse, and each different ordering activity has got a different level of maturity, readiness, and active participation, and they all have different technical architectures to start out with. So we're trying to organize the government to get the best deal on these cybersecurity controls. At the same time, like recently, like with the OPM hack, it's urgent. So you've got to do it very fast, but also maintain, an equal opportunity for every interested vendor to bid on that requirement. So it's a massive program. It's taking up probably a third of my organization's resources right now to try and deliver all of these in succession. And this is only going to continue. So organizationally, it's probably our most significant program right now, and it's definitely going to get the most attention from every stakeholder. Number two, and this is true in any organization, but if you think about it in the government, it's got, unique challenges. Just generally hiring and retention. The services that we deliver are entirely people-based. The quality of the people and their ability to execute. We lost about 26 people in the last 2 years to retirement. Subject matter experts, senior folks, absolutely killer in their trade, But now they get to, buy their boat and, move out to the farm and do whatever it is that you want to do in retirement or, keep working. And then I've got to replace and retrain. So I'm in the midst of that retooling for the organization. A third one is an area that I'm very passionate about. This one may get some coverage later if I keep talking about it. I am not a fan of the current protest venue and processes. My office focuses on very large acquisition. By default, if you have a large program where an incumbent is not successful, their inclination is likely to protest because there is an underlying revenue incentive for them to file a challenge, whether or not the process was conducted fairly or not. There is a value in a public procurement system to be able to protest. You absolutely need to have that as the right way of making sure that the government follows its procedures. But the incentives are misaligned right now. And so we need to change something in the way that the protest venue works so that there is a cost that equals the revenue incentive for a company that loses. So they're just not delaying the outcome.
So, Chris, given your background as the deputy director, now as director, what are the characteristics to you of an effective leader? And perhaps you can illustrate some of your leadership principles that you've used.
I had an opportunity to go to a class at the Harvard Kennedy School for Government. And one of the things that they gave you was a printout of a lot of the previous Harvard Business School reports. Mm-hmm. There's one there from Kotter called Leading Change, the eight steps in trying to lead change in building coalitions. It's very powerful. I have it printed out next to my computer, just a reminder. There's a way to do this. Mm-hmm. All systems are resistant to change, but if you just try and follow these eight steps, you'll be able to get there. I had an opportunity to have two different supervisors, two different parts of my career, where they let me take risks that break the standard way of this is how we do it. So because I had two different supervisors that gave me the opportunity to take a risk, have support, make sure that we do it properly, and then change our core processes, that's what I'm trying to do now for the organization. I want to reduce the amount of non-value-added effort that we're putting into this system. I hate waste and I hate inefficiency. I hate writing the check for my taxes at the end of the year, and I'm sure everyone else does too. It's really around trying to support every employee to feel confident that they're making decisions. As long as their intent is supporting the government, we'll have their back and we'll support them and then design a system that lets them do that.
What are the strategic priorities for FedSIM? We will ask its director, Chris Hamm, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.